APAMADA's programmes and facilities are supported through your generosity. Your support really does make a huge difference. You'll find a link for contributions on the website at apamada.org/contribute. Thank you so much.
Okay, I want to follow up on a question that was about the symbolism of 108 in our Buddhist tradition. So that number 108 goes back as a sort of special number, even into the Hindu tradition, and probably even before that. But specific to Buddhism, there's a piece in the story of Juzu, which is by Bishop Shinsho Aniyama. And it's what I learned about this number. So I'll share with you. The equation is the product of senses, feelings, attachment to pleasure, and time. So six senses are recognized in Buddhism: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and consciousness, mind. Now, each of these six sensations is associated with pleasant, unpleasant, or indifferent feelings, making a total of 18 feelings, right? Furthermore, each of the pleasant, unpleasant, and indifferent feelings has two classifications: those feelings that are attached to pleasure or detached from pleasure, right? When we multiply the 18 different kinds of feelings with the two classifications, we arrive at the figure 36. These 36 are the basic passions of humans that are manifested in time, past, present, and future. Thus, 36 multiplied by past, present, and future will give us a total of 108 passions. So when we struggle in meditation and in the world, we can realize we have this awesome, daunting challenge of the 108 passions. So that's, anyway, I wanted to sort of give the fuller story of of the significance of that number. But it's found throughout different ceremonies and different parts of our tradition, but particularly in terms of the mala now. We do not in Zen use mala for chanting as they do in the Tibetan tradition or for keeping track of anything, but there are Zen malas, and they are used in very, very formal ceremonies. So when I did the Dharma Heritage Ceremony and the meeting of the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, you hold a mala and you bow with the mala. So rest of the time it's sort of in your sleeve. But anyway, you don't see it generally in use, and you won't want to accept in some extremely formal ceremonies. Also, this came to me when I was doing Kinhin this morning. Some lines from a very old song. There's a change in the weather, there's a change in the sea, so from now on there'll be a change in me. And it felt to me like, you know, because of this front coming in and the change in the weather and this sort of transformational work that we're doing, it seemed really appropriate. It's a very old song. It's been covered by a lot of people, Peggy Lee and Dave Brubeck, and I have no idea who the original songwriter was, but the rest of the verse is, so there's a change in the weather, there's a change in the sea, so from now on there'll be a change in me. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my way of living. If that ain't enough, then I'll change the way that I strut my stuff. Because nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made. Wonderful. I could not remember any of the rest of that song except those first couple of lines, but I thought it was great.
Before you can interject something.
Yes.
So we had our lunch and we were walking back. As we're walking along by the golf course, this young woman stops us and just kind of looks at us. And she said, "I know you." And we both kind of like, oh. And she said, "You're Flint Sparks and you're Peg Syverson."
And we both felt really bad.
I have no idea. And then she said, "Well, You knew me in another gender. And told us who she had been previously, who we remembered completely.
Of course.
Yeah, but.
What a transformation.
Wow, and so when you were, what was that part of there?
There'll be some changes made. It's gonna be the same.
I'm gonna, I'm gonna change my way of living, if that ain't enough, I'll change my way, I'll strut my stuff, you know? Anyway, she was beautiful and sweet and very kind, said, I'm just reemerging now, and never in a million years would I recognize her. It was a sweet moment.
No, but I think she was kind of tickled that we didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I think also really happy with our response.
Oh, yeah.
Very.
She was fabulous.
Yeah.
Out for a walk, you know?
Okay, we wanted to start our activity today with a poem. And I will read it once and then Flint will read it once. It's a poem by Ellen Bass, so some of you may be familiar with this poem. It's called If You Knew. What if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm, brush your fingertips along the lifeline's crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember, they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been with her aunt. They'd just had lunch. And the waiter, a young gay man with plum black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when they left. Then they walked half a block and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon spume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time?
On Tuesday, I got a call from Carolyn Miles, and she said, I really would love to see you while I'm here because I'm more ill, some of you know Carolyn, some of you know. And I said, can I come see you right now? She said, yes. I was during the day, it was a break, so I called Uber really quick and just got down there, and she had taken some pain medication, which allowed her to be up out of bed, which she hadn't been in a couple of days. And we got to sit for an hour or so and really talk, I mean, really about everything. And then, you know, finished with our usual pleasantries and I gave her a hug and a kiss and we said goodbye, but then you have to leave. Like, Clayton was saying to me earlier in a message, like, how did you say goodbye? No, it's pretty ordinary in some ways, but not. Which is, yeah, maybe that was the last time I'll touch her, I don't know. What if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm. Brush your fingers along the lifeline's crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of you doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been with her aunt, they just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed his aunt's powdered cheek when they left. Then they walked half a block and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon's spume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time.
So we'd like you to do an activity that will be very familiar to some of you, which is a walk and talk. For those of you who are not familiar, this is done in pairs. You walk in silence for 5 minutes. Then each person in turn has 10 minutes to speak or be silent, however much of that time is their time. The other person simply is a compassionate listener. So there's no
crosstalk,
no dialogue in it, no asking questions. So after each person has had a turn, then you walk in silence for 5 minutes, and then you find a place to either sit down or stand and just talk about what that experience has been like for you, and that will be for about 10 minutes. So, so for the monitor, that'll be breakout rooms of two, and the timing is, let's see, 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, there's five, silence, 10, 10.
And then
five silence.
And then 10 discussing.
And then 10 discussion.
So 40 minutes.
40 minutes.
40 minutes.
Yeah, that's 40 minutes.
And right now, what we're thinking about is your experience that you had. Once again, it's, as teachers, we're nosy. We're interested in what you might share.
So, yeah, my experience from before lunch till now, well, before from then till the talk, to my talk with Nelda. So it was a forms situation where. Nelda said, can I tell you something, you know? And when you're doing the corners, I don't know if it's exactly right.
Don't stop flowing.
Yeah, because I really was really this way and then this way, and apparently I was like stomping a little bit on the turn. And, you know, she showed me, you know, like make it a little more curves. No, that's fine. And then when you said, and you know, you're getting pretty sloppy on the turns. And that.
I didn't actually say that.
Did you say sloppy?
That's what we
I don't read really
no,
you
say
sloppy. Don't cut corners.
Don't cut corners.
Because some people were just kind of like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was me.
No, you were. You,
no.
I saw
okay,
you. You
okay.
Were very precise. You would just make a little pause.
However, this history, I received a double message. And completely unstable, destabilized.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You made up a really painful story.
I certainly did. Well, and yeah, I was just in that for a while. And then and then it was lunchtime, and Joel decided to give me another lesson on the water. You know, which, you know, I hadn't heard about the water and changing it and the dust on the top. And have used the holy water and all of that. And so we did that and had lunch, and there's still this double message thing was in me. Come back to the next size and it's kind of still with me. And then I thought, oh, I've been receiving a lot of instruction since the beginning of this, especially as cheating. Oh, I never got any.
Oh, really?
Never got
any
what?
Yeah.
Instruction.
Instruction growing
yeah.
up.
Oh,
zero.
So this is actually a new experience.
Oh my God, and it's a lot of grief.
Yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
grief about that. Then.
So
third,
people are reaching out to supporting care and love.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, it's a lot of grief. And then the last part is this is the last day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a triple.
Grief.
Triple treasure.
Yeah.
So, and I thought of Joko saying, you know, this is a manufactured nerve breakdown. I go, that's it. So, and then magically, Nelda and I were paired together. So we had 45 minutes. And, you know, I really, I spoke first. I had to first assure her that she knew that she had, that there was a trigger. And I said, you're not that important, it's okay. You know, you didn't do this.
And I said, oh, thank goodness.
She understood. And, you know, I explained to her what I just explained, and she's very kind. And then she talked, and basically I have a lot of similar history, a lot of trauma
How
as
are you
well.
Now?
Well, much more stable, yeah.
You mean there is relief from suffering?
Yeah.
You're not in the same place you were.
Absolutely not, absolutely not. And I told her that one of the things that I thought of is what my therapist would be saying, it sounds like it's been very productive.
And what the teacher would say is, all suffering is self-liberating. If you stay with it, it opens itself over time.
Yes.
If you stay with it.
And I feel my whole row of people with your point. Yeah, because it was kind of loud.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody, for supporting me.
Other experiences from your dyads? Anyone? Is Becky, are you coming forward? You popped up there.
Now. It was quite wonderful having the Tusum thing. I was with Lisa, and we have a lot to talk with each other about. We decided that we may need to make sure that we do beyond the times that we just have that.
Yeah, have a good spiritual friend.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful. Was there anything else you wanted to say since we had not gotten to you earlier with your hand up? Or is that mainly what you wanted to say?
I guess so.
Okay. I just wanted to double check. I miss you.
So, I love this exercise. Exercise is one of the first times it was with someone who I didn't know at all. And the difference this time was it was with Lori, and we've been talking for years. And
for good or ill, you know this.
I said at the end, kind of nothing changes. We have the same struggles that we've always had. But I noticed one change in me, and that was. In something we read or something you said, like, how was the intensive for me? And immediately I thought, how was it for my wife?
Mm.
Because in a sense, she reflects, you know, what's going on in me. And if anything's going on positive, it would like ease her life or something. And she's going through a very difficult time where she's painting ginkgo leaves on 50 plates and having to really focus and glaze and she hates commissions but doing it because she likes the people in Illinois. And anyway, so it's especially a struggle for her. And I felt like, coming home every day, I felt a little positive impact, and that that reflection, that mirror reflection was deep. And it was deep that my mind immediately went there. So that's all.
That's very, very kind, yeah. I appreciate that, because I have to be gone, and I'm so far away and for so long. How is this for me? How is it for my partner, too?
They go through the intensive also.
Yeah, they have their own intensive.
We talked about that the other day.
I was so happy to get to talk to Gail, because I'd been wanting to talk to her for the whole intensive. Gail and I haven't spoken since pre-pandemic, I don't think. Maybe a little bit of time.
4 years.
And And it was so good to talk to her. And it appears that we're on sort of parallel paths. Two big topics were seeking versus being, and practicing as these bodies get older. And various off branches of those. And anyway, it was just real. I was really happy to get to talk with Gail.
I did. Ellen and I, not only did we have a lot of commonality, but we both wanted to speak. it was a lovely interchange with Ellen. And it reminded me of something you've said, Flint, in the past, that when we come into this world, we have three questions. And I don't know if I have this right, but it's, do you see me? Do you hear me? Do you choose me?
It's, are you there?
Are you there?
Do you see or hear me? And then do you choose me?
Yes. Okay, are you there? But what it elicits for me was what just happened. I didn't know how much I needed it until I got it.
Yeah.
And also, the listening was very important too. I got to express myself, and I felt heard and seen and chosen. And then I got to do the same for Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
And, finding out that we have a lot of commonality, which is kind of the way it is in life, right? Until you actually talk to somebody, you kind of think we're all different, but we're not that different. So
it's like in the poem, if we could really see people as they are.
Yes. Yes.
It's not necessarily about commonalities or non-commonalities. It's just something, you see the beauty of each person. You see the Buddha there. And you can find what I'm saying, what you're saying, just in different words, that the holding and listening can be as nourishing or more than the speaking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not sure if I heard Kim correctly. I don't know if he was talking about his wife and
yes.
How this was. I had the exact same feeling about this retreat. And after my talk with Ellen, I thought if I could meet my husband in the same way, you know, more often, how beautiful would that be?
Yeah, this is the secret marital therapy part.
It is, and everybody actually.
Of course.
You know. Yeah.
It's good to see and hear you.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be seen and heard. Hi, everybody.
Leslie.
I told Sandra I couldn't believe you read that poem right now. I remember it. I think you may have done it at an inquiry or something.
Sure.
I remember the poem. But I lost a friend yesterday.
Oh.
Diana Hoffman.
Oh, yes, right. I got the message too.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming, but it still came as a surprise.
Oh, yeah. See, this is very close. Hold on a second. Tom Spencer's sister died on Monday.
Oh.
Is that right?
I got the message yesterday.
Yeah, I think
so,
early this week.
I don't know what day it was.
Yeah. So anyway, they had connections. So
okay.
I just wanted to make that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was his only relative. And...
yeah, he's alone now. Yeah. Anyway, but, and then what was I going to say about that? Oh, what I was going to say, what the poem really brought up is I hadn't talked to her in a while and she hadn't been responding. Text and email, so I finally called her like a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And if I'd waited another week,
yeah,
I wouldn't have talked to her at all. And she still did, she never let on. Oh, I'm doing great, not doing treatment right now.
Were you in the photo workshop with her at
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought of.
No, not the one at the HUI.
Oh,
I wasn't with them there.
Okay.
that I remember thinking.
Yeah, but that feeling, like if I hadn't have done it, if I hadn't seen Carolyn the other day, like that moment is a little window.
Right.
Now she's not responding anymore.
And it meant so much to me that I was able to connect with her, and she was so happy to hear from me, you know, and it was really, it really was important to me.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so we had a beautiful conversation, and
you're very tender right now.
Yeah. So what I told Sandra is, I'm holding my sadness in this hand and joy in this hand.
Yeah.
And they're kind of doing this, you know? But they're both there.
Yep.
Thank you.
I want to say something just about the exercise itself. Not particularly what we talked about, but I really like this exercise a lot. Much better than the Hakomi stuff. Thank you. The reason I like it is because so often you don't do it until the end of the intensive or towards the end. And the reason that's important for me is by this time in the intensive, I have no defenses left. I am so physically exhausted, emotionally drained and vulnerable, that there is nothing else I can do but be open. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this exercise during this time is so powerful. So that's all I want to say.
And those are the things that as teachers we try to think about. Mm-hmm. When is the time?
Good job.
We do our best, you know. People still say they like and don't like things, but that's practice, you know. Attachment and aversion, the center of practice.
Even if you give us negative course evaluations, no one's going to fire us.
That's true.
We can get rid.
That's right.
We were the poem brought up the experiences that we've had over, with Bridget and I were talking about over the years with family members having deaths in the family, and just how that changes so many dynamics over time, and how it's it's like I was for me at least, I was describing this situation where my sister-in-law had terminal cancer and died after 3 years, and she had like a lot of other postpartum depression and all these other things going on at the same time. And so it was like there was an element of like, how do you continue through that and try to maintain this openness and presence and still have the ability to sort of not try to get too kind of anchored down by that in a way, but still be sensitive to it. And I think we were just appreciating the spiritual friendship of this. Of
you were saying that?
No, with me.
Oh, with you. Yeah. I can see you were looking back there.
Yeah,
I was
trying to turn.
Yeah.
So yeah, the spiritual friendship and community and the ability to, within this container of our practice, be able to sort of resource and help guide each other through these difficult, you know, times, and even sometimes these things are, as we all know, just we think it's going to get better in some ways, and sometimes it just continues.
Well, that's the thing about grief that people don't get. Changes and moves around. It doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Like when you get through it, it's like, then you want to hit them. No, it's not how it goes. But it does need to be witnessed a lot. Mm-hmm. Fixed, no.
But shared, it also encourages others to share themselves in that way and see if they can be supported. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of people, they carry it all inside themselves, mm-hmm. and they feel like I'm supposed to suck it up and do this, you know. And so seeing someone be vulnerable in that way sort of opens the door for them and gives them a sense, oh, there's that possibility, right? This is a safe place to do that.
When one person shares vulnerability, then it invites the other person to share also.
Yeah, or the whole sangha, you know, like to...
Like this, it's happening now.
Yeah.
And the other aspect that was sort of going on is there was a frustration at times of the silence, not being able to just even say, oh, you know, and validate or something like that, but also sort of this realization of, yeah, there's sometimes that I could just be silent and that would help.
Yeah.
Not because I might fall into that trap of trying to fix or help or something, and really it's the witnessing that.
And there's nothing wrong with being responsive, it's just that we practice that more often.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we're trying to balance it up by practicing with the spacious, long holding without responding, so that we have both resources available to us.
And also you can begin to see how we agitate ourselves, you know, a little bit of anxiety of wanting to affirm this connection, and yes, I'm still here, I'm still listening.
And who is that for? The thing I want to say, who's that for? Another question. So it opens up a lot of layers.
I would say, just from being on that side, the best thing you can do is just listen. You know, not respond, you know, by saying anything, but your presence, people really underestimate the power of full presence. It is huge.
And it's precisely what we're practicing.
People in grief don't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, our culture doesn't really tell others that that's something to do, and they don't know that it would be helpful, but probably can't, you know, some aren't able. So it's really important just looking at someone and being there, not saying anything.
Because we think
you
it's
think,
doing,
oh, I'm not doing anything.
We think it's doing nothing, but actually it's doing a lot.
You're just there. And a person in really deep grief does not know how to ask for that. And I'm getting better about it, at asking for what I need. And this was like just a, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, because all, you all know how. You know, Joel is so compassionate and responsive, and we just get going on our walk, and I start talking, and it's just a trigger, but I start talking, and he's just saying, yeah, I forget what you said, that you were trying to affirm that you understood. I said, aren't we just talking and listening? You just corrected a teacher. I'm trying to be straight with the people that I can be.
And you were teaching.
You were teaching.
You were teaching.
We both, we do that with each other all the time.
Because I just have, it's just real, you know, it gets triggered in me, right? You know, I'm not seeing that heard, and sometimes I get,
And we get you a form. The form for that exercise.
We had a wonderful walk.
And we know you love Joel.
I do.
I want to say, Darcy and I have talked a lot over the years, and I know something about her grief, you know, but I feel totally seen by her.
They would begin to touch it. So I grieve.
Mm-hmm.
Not yours or yours. And the joy.
The poem reminds me of my 86-year-old dad who has cancer, and he's a serious Southern gentleman Republican who just retired and spends his days on the golf course as much as he can. And
he's always been a man of few words. And we struggled to find like good things to talk about, but it's so great now as he's giving, as he's feeling his mortality so acutely, he is like cries and he'll grab my hands and he'll say, I couldn't love you more.
Oh.
And,
I couldn't love you more.
So I just love that as a, like, that feels so good. So I'm not gonna go like saying it to everybody because it has to come from a very genuine, sincere place, but I have been trying it out on my teenage children and when it's appropriate and when it feels.
But your dad is late in the intensive. He's worn down. So now it's coming out, like definitely.
Yeah, it's so sweet. It's just, and I guess, yes, there's grief and there's joy, and because they're rubbing up against each other so acutely for him, he cries with love right now. And that's really sweet.
With you too. That leave you out.
All right. Thank you, T folks.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone.